I'm Bradley George, filling in today for Bill Nygut. Joining us on the panel, as he is most days, Jim Galloway from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jim,
good afternoon.
Hey there. And also with us, Leo Smith, Director of Minority Engagement for the Georgia Republican Party. Leo,
hello.
Glad you're here as well. Senator Nan Orrick, State Senator Nan Orrick of Atlanta, is supposed to be here as well. Hopefully she will arrive shortly. And I want to start, Jim, and I'll ask Nan about this when she gets here, but there was a big gathering of Democrats in Atlanta last night. What was going on?
Well, it was this was their annual fundraiser. It used to be called the Jefferson Jackson Dinner.
And Democratic parties across the country.
No longer. It's just something a little more bland now. But what it really was, this came 48 hours after the 6th District contest ended, and John Ossoff pulled what I think is a surprising 48%. In that race. And every year when these Democrats gather, it's kind of like an opportunity to lick wounds. They've been beat up pretty badly since 2002, but not last night. No, they were in pretty good and confident shape.
And this event coincides with a tour that the new DNC chair Tom Perez and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders are doing, and this is to mostly, well, I think it's all to red states, to places that voted for Trump.
And also to paper over any differences that kind of linger from the Bernie Sanders Hillary Clinton primary of last year.
Right.
And Perez got a good reception last night, but he was out the door as soon as he finished talking. He had an experience in Maine on Monday in which the Democratic crowd kind of kept shouting for Bernie, and he probably didn't want to talk about that.
Yeah. And Jim, the rapidity of the cultural shifts in the Democrat Party, it wasn't, how long ago was it that the Jefferson Jackson Dinner was renamed? It was just recently, wasn't it?
I think this is only the second year they've done without the name. But most of the tables were filled. The crowd was spirited. Nan Orrock, who has just walked in,
yes.
she stayed late. I think I left a little bit early.
You had longer, further to drive, Jim.
You're just going back to the east side, and Jim's going all
that's
the way
right.
out to
that's right.
Wilds of Cobb County. Nan, I want to hear your take on this event last night.
Oh, it was a sellout, as you heard Jim say that. You didn't say that, Jim, but you said it was full room. And it absolutely was, because I was bringing some additional guests at the last minute, and we had to squeeze to get them in and to get them a place at the table. High enthusiasm, first chance for everybody to hear from our new chairman, Perez, former labor commissioner, great guy. The crowd went wild over Maxine.
Maxine Waters was there, yeah.
And her message was, she's in there for the fight, and we need to all be in there for the fight as we see the direction this administration's taking.
Now, what was interesting here was that the kind of the star of the show, Maxine was the keynote, but the star was really John Ossoff.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And he got up there, and his remarks were very, very brief. I mean, like no more than 3 minutes, maybe 3 minutes and a few seconds. And then he disappeared. He was out of that room before Maxine Waters got up to speak.
Well, he barely got out of the room because every table was stopping him.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And were you still, there, Jim, when he was making his way towards the door? Or not?
I was there when he was gone.
Right.
As he left.
Yes, because people were hounding him.
But my point is, he's running as a centrist.
Right.
John Ossoff is running as a centrist Democrat. Maxine Waters is anything but. And just like Karen Handel has to deal with Donald Trump on one side, the Ossoff has to deal with the left wing of the Democratic Party.
Right. I want to draw you out on this point, Jim, because this is something you brought up in your blog today in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And this is something I noticed, too. I went out and I did a story for Here and Now, and I talked to Ossoff a little bit. And there's this disconnect between you know, he has these TV commercials and things where he says, I'm going to be a check on President Trump. There's that commercial with John Lewis where John Lewis says Ossoff is tough enough to hold Trump accountable. Then journalists start asking Ossoff about this. And he kind of goes to this other place and he starts talking about, well, this is about local issues. This is about my economic message, high tech jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Why is it you think that he can't, when you know, you and I, when reporters ask him about this,
because
that
we're
he
local.
Can't acknowledge
we're
that, local. That
look,
there's
local.
this Trump factor
right.
in this
we're,
race.
We're local. I mean, this is he's the Trump message is for those outside of Georgia, outside the 6th district, who are giving him money.
Right.
I mean, and that's and so that's a message to your national and we're not talking big money. We're talking about, you know, the $40 donors who have really sparked this campaign. The when he talks about community and economic development, there he's talking to 6th district voters that he has to woo.
Well, I would point out, and I'm sure it's been said far and wide. Most people know Trump barely won that district.
They both pulled the same. They
by
both pulled.
Point. That's
they,
right.
They both pulled 48%.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Trump. Where Price got 22 points ahead in his take on that election. Trump barely pulled ahead of Hillary, and there are Hillary voters in that district. They're disaffected Republicans by Trump's shenanigans. And when he talks about taking on Trump, there are people in the district that are hearing that loud and clear. And the energy in the district, the incredible enthusiasm, and I've got not only personal friends but family members that have been out there hoofing it every day, working the doors in Congressional District 6, are very much driven by it's time to restore sanity to American politics and to the White House.
But can he maintain that?
Well, and
that
I think he's got to do both. I think
it's going to be a slog.
He'd be foolish to not talk about the issues in the district, not talk about jobs, not talk about technology and green energy and all the issues that people are coping with. You know, the kitchen table issues. But he's doing both. He's doing both.
I think that he's a formidable candidate. I think that we're going to have to deal with the fact that he stays on message. He has a message for his donors, as Jim is saying, and he has a message for the local people who need to be fed a local message. He has created, I think, he's continued the current of a movement of young millennials and folks who might have sort of been disinterested in politics heretofore. And his party was a great contrast. I mean, Karen's party was the typical Republican party, people sitting at tables on election night. And his party was people dancing. I don't know. It looked like they had a DJ or something. It was a party.
Yeah,
and that's a different energy. And
that's
the Republican
right.
Republicans are really going. We, the Republican Party, are going to really have to deal with that.
Yeah, Bradley, I would say, Ossoff is, in my experience, he's probably the most disciplined first-time candidate that I've run across.
He's very prepared. That was my takeaway.
Yeah,
he's
not new to the political world, despite the fact that he hasn't held office himself. You know, he's worked in Washington. He's worked with Hank Johnson. He's worked with John Lewis. He's worked with many folks. I've known him and his family a long time. I would say this. You noted today that Handel, in response to being pushed, said, yes, she could see herself supporting a ban on gay abortions. I'm sorry, a
gay
ban
adoption.
On gay adoption. Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge faux pas there. She came out today saying in response to a question that she could back a ban on gay adoption. That is not going to be popular in many parts of her district. And that's going to continue to incent the base of John Ossoff supporters as a reason why this woman is cannot be sent to Washington.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that part. Bradley, there was one interesting thing in Perez's speech. It was kind of a signal that you know, national politics is really in many respects a small town where everybody knows everybody else.
Right.
His press secretary was John Ossoff's college roommate at Georgetown University. Perez himself knows Karen Handel because he headed up the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department when it sued Karen.
When she was Secretary of State.
When she was Secretary of State.
Where she's now bragging about her photo ID work she did as Secretary of State.
We're going to talk about more of this in just a few minutes, but it is spring fun drive time
it
here
is.
At GPB, and it's your support that keeps Political Rewind and all the shows on GPB that matter to you on the air. And we've got some folks here that are going to encourage you to do your part to support GPB right now. Thanks for joining us for Political Rewind on GPB. I'm Bradley George, joined by Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Leo Smith of the Georgia GOP, Democratic State Senator Nan Orrick of Atlanta. We've been talking a little bit about some of the aftermath of the runoff in the 6th Congressional District, which, of course, is now headed to a runoff, which is what I just said. We're talking about the primary. That was this week. I can't keep it straight, man.
June 20th.
Okay, June 20th. And you can join the conversation as well on Twitter. We're at PoliticsGPB. That's PoliticsGPB. You can send us a tweet with if you've got questions or comments for the panel. We'll work those in as we go.
Bradley, we haven't pointed out that Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, has come on board with an endorsement of John Ossoff.
Just happened in the last hour or so.
That's right.
Okay, and he was at this gathering, this Democratic Party gathering last night, correct?
No, Sanders wasn't there. The significance of that is that earlier this week, Sanders gave an interview with the Wall Street Journal where he seemed to question whether John Ossoff would be a, quote, progressive.
He said all Democrats aren't progressive. There are Democrats,
and when he was asked if that applied to Ossoff, he said he didn't know.
And we should just point out that that Bernie Sanders himself is not a Democrat; that he's an independent.
Right, but in terms of kind of a seal of approval for Democratic enthusiasm, Bernie Sanders was very much necessary.
That's right.
And as a Democrat, how do you feel about that? That Bernie Sanders is a validator of who's a progressive. And
well,
who's a,
I have said on the air on this program many months back that I hoped that Bernie would get in the race. That I thought it would be good for the Democrats to have a vigorous primary, and that he would surface ideas and a progressive point of view that would move the conversation forward and move the needle. And I continue to maintain that. I believe that's true, and I'm glad that Senator Sanders is a major milepost, a signal tower, if you will, for Democrats. I mean, he's standing up against all of the policies and the forces and the institutions that are hurting working people, that are, you know, fast disappearing the middle class in this country. The country that built the greatest middle class in the world, in history, and we are seeing it taken apart steadily over the last several years.
You think about it from a position of political products, and the Democrat Party really does have a variety, a diverse lineup of political products right now. Mm-hmm. And the products that are new to their field, like Bernie Sanders and his movement, is really driving a lot of interest in even centrist Democrats. And so even if John Ossoff is considered a centrist, I think he still will garner a lot of attention from those new Bernie Sanders.
You'll find him using the language Sanders quite a bit.
And let me say that Senator Fort, a fellow Vincent senator Ford, with whom I serve and a candidate for mayor, Senator Fort is very enthusiastic about the Ossoff race and is very active on social media.
Well, after all, the Republicans are saying he's just like Nancy Pelosi, so maybe he's not far from Sanders.
But Republicans say that about every Democrat, though, right? I mean, that's kind of the generic catch-all attack for any Democrat.
Yeah, I thought they'd worn that out, and then they'd dragging it up again.
So we talked a lot about Democrats. We talked about what John Ossoff needs to do in this race. Leo, what does Karen Handel need to do to unify Republicans around her?
Well, you know, obviously with 10 of her fellow Republicans running, some one would argue whether or not they were truly Republicans. But the job now is to take that, 97,997 people and get them all to vote for her, which is going to be a rather challenging thing. Although Karen has great experience as a officer of the state, as Secretary of State, it also means that she has a track record that people will critique and people have had experiences with her from the Fulton Commission on.
That's right. She's
going to have to appeal to them. She's going to appeal to independents. And who knows, maybe she can pick off a few Democrats too.
And she's well aware of this. I mean, the first thing that her campaign sent out on Wednesday morning after the election was an endorsement from Nathan Deal.
Right.
And she and the governor have a history, and some very cross words have been said in the past.
That was
key. Just to remind folks that Karen Handel was in a very very close GOP primary
right,
with Nathan Deal in 2010.
Yeah. Well, the 2010 runoff. She came in first in the primary and then lost the runoff to Deal.
Right. And she got an endorsement for Saxby Chambliss, and I think she's just gotten an endorsement for Sarah Palin.
She's a two- or three-time loser, isn't she?
Well, she's a multiple-time winner when it counts.
I mean, it's so interesting that she chooses to brag about the voter ID when that's now being exposed, you know, in Georgia and around the nation as being a very clever way to put up barriers to the ballot.
We should just remind folks that when Karen Handel was Secretary of State in the mid-2000s, she didn't introduce voter ID, but she presided over its implementation
in
Georgia.
She was in charge of Georgia elections. The other thing
and drew some fire nationally from the Justice Department. She made more inquiries about matching driver's license, et cetera. Was it Social Security, Jim? Your memory is better than mine, but it was a federal agency that wrote her back and said no Secretary of State in the country has lodged this level and this intensity.
I'm not sure, but I would also say is it the G8 now? The Republican Georgia Republicans in Congress.
Yes.
This morning they also endorsed. They kind of circled the wagons and
they all endorsed.
So you're seeing Republicans recognize that unity is their number one problem that they've got to address going into this race.
And Karen is going to represent a really really interesting opportunity for Republicans because she has been a leader before. I think most people consider her leadership to have been successful. I think any Secretary of State that's Republican is probably going to get sued about voter rights.
Have you ever wondered, Leo, why that is?
I mean, I think it's political strategy to sue Republicans about voter rights. I think, you know, the whole voter ID thing, I mean, people don't think that's a real issue, I don't think. But Karen is a woman, and she's not going to play it up like that because that's not her style. But the fact
because Republicans are pretty anti-woman, that's why she's not going to play it up.
If she wins, she would be the first female Republican sent to Congress by Georgia.
And the first female congressperson from Georgia since Cynthia McKinney, correct?
Denise Majette,
that's right.
Karen has this great corporate experience that she has in her background as well. So, I mean, she really does present some nice opportunity to be transcendent about gender issues, da-da-da-da-da, but at the same time, they are an issue.
Okay, and we will have to put another pause in the conversation to remind you to support GPB with a contribution right now. Thanks for joining us for Political Rewind on GPB. I'm Bradley George, filling in for Bill Nye. It's Jim Galloway is with us today. Also, Democratic State Senator Nan Orrick and Leo Smith from the Georgia Republican Party. So we've spent a lot of time talking about Democrats and this Democratic gathering, this fundraiser in Atlanta last night. Next week, we're going to see lots of conservatives in Atlanta. Jim, it's the annual convention of the NRA.
Strap your holster on. About 60,000 people are expected to come here. Mm-hmm. And the highlight is going to be a Friday speech. Leo, you say it's at noon.
Donald Trump.
From President Donald Trump. He'll be the first sitting president to address the NRA since Ronald Reagan.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yes. And the other highlight will be my party with a bunch of urban millennials and who are Second Amendment right enthusiasts.
You can expect quite a bit of fundraising of Georgia GOP fundraising.
What do you mean when you say urban millennials of your party? What are we talking about here?
The young hipster millennial age people who are saying, you know what, I don't like these boxes we put each other in when it comes to things like campus carry and when it comes to things like the right to carry. It is not a partisan thing as much as it is a perspective on freedom and Second Amendment rights.
Well, if we can get away from that one just a minute, Bradley. One of the other things, one of the little sideshows that we need to watch is going to be whether there's any kind of interaction between President Trump and Karen Handel.
I was about to ask
the sixth district candidate.
What, Leo, what do you think the likelihood of that is?
I think that I would expect it. And I would also expect, staying on topic with the Second Amendment, I think Governor Deal might actually make some there might be some intimations, or at least some there might be some movement related.
There's
to
a bill people. Out there yeah. to be signed.
Yeah,
and you know it's going to be interesting. That's there are all sorts of common sense Republicans that know we don't need guns on campuses. That the hormones, alcohol, and 18-year-olds are a bad and guns are a bad mix. And make no sense.
But if you're going to, if you're Governor Deal, and if you're going to sign that campus carry bill, what better time is there to sign it than when the NRA is in
but
town?
But if you're going to veto it, maybe not
then,
so
then
much.
Then maybe you go fishing.
Do we have any sense?
Exactly, that'll
Jim,
be a read.
Jim, in any sense at all of what? The governor's thinking about this. We know what he said in the past about what changes he wanted to see to that bill as it evolved, as it made its way through. But do we have any kind of sense of what kind
no,
of actions?
No, I personally don't. No, and but you do have some very nervous opponents out there who have been raising the issue of who have been pointing to Governor Deal's veto message of last year, which cited Jefferson and
that's right. And University of Virginia
and they're urging him to kind of hew to that line. We'll see if they do, if he does.
Leah, I want to get back to this this point. How for conservatives, for Republicans, how big of a fundraising, of an organizing drawing card is having something like the NRA convention in Atlanta?
Well, I think certainly to have all these big names coming to town from, you know, folks like Alan West and
former
others,
Congressman
and
Alan
Sarah
West
Palin
of Florida,
and folks
Sarah
coming
Palin.
To town, that gives a grand opportunity to whisk one of them away from the Congress Center, take them up to the district and, you know, maybe Dunwoody area, or take them somewhere maybe at someone's house and have a very nice $1,000 fundraiser. And I think we're going to see a lot of that doing that time from the 26th on through
the
30th.
So this is a pretty plum opportunity for
absolutely.
Karen Handel to raise money.
And some might say that continuing to drive a stake through the heart of that congressional district, the schism gets bigger and bigger when you start dragging Sarah Palin's and Alan West into the 6th congressional district. That is not who those people are in large part. And continuing to play to the base. Of course, you want your base out in a special election runoff. You certainly want your base out.
But that district does have the Rubio fans and stuff like that, and I think Rubio will come around and also endorse Handel.
Well, that's a different cry. That's a far cry from Sarah Palin.
Right.
Really, haven't we really left her in the rearview mirror as far as the nutcase?
No, she was at the White House for 4 hours yesterday.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you know, Bannon was on her bandwagon before he got on Trump's bandwagon. She and Bannon are very close. Steve Bannon.
Yeah, he was the executive producer of the movie about her.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
What a crowd! I'll tell you what.
But it's one of those things that look. This happens on both sides. You've got people who motivate the base of the Republican Party. You've got people who motivate the base of the Democratic Party, and it's kind of like dealing with live wires. You don't want to cross the wires and with the
hastily
wrong...
right. You don't want to make the wrong hookup.
Right. And so you don't introduce your far left to your centrist on the Democratic side. You don't introduce your far right to your centrist on the your moderate Republicans on that side.
That's right.
I think we can all agree on that.
See, we came to an agreement
on
something.
I was just thinking back to the fact that you can't point to anybody on the Democratic side that's not robustly backing the Ossoff candidate. And the schism between centrists and leftists in the Democratic Party, I think, is not tearing us apart.
No, in Georgia, I think. In Georgia, it may be elsewhere where Democrats are in the majority and where they're in power. But I think, Bradley, I would say that Nan's right on this one. That the hunger, the desire for coming back into influence is such that they're ignoring all the divisions.
Well, you know, there's something about winning, and winning can not only make you lazy, it can make you complacent. And Republicans have won a lot. And if they were like Bear Bryant at University of Alabama, and they said, "Hey, we don't need to do anything different," And then all of a sudden, Gramley comes up and beats Alabama. And, you know, I said, wait, we need to integrate, you know, because so the Republicans are going to deal with some of those same issues. But I think we're aware of it. I think we're aware that we have a lot of different voices in the Republican Party, a lot of different people in different corners, and that this is creating robust conversation and we're going to be all right.
So whistling past the graveyard, some might say.
Well, we'll see. So I want to get back to this, Jim. We got a, less than a minute here before we got a break again. But no action from the governor on campus carry. Haven't seen much action on some of these other bills as well. Do we have any sense at all of when the governor is going to be signing some of these other key pieces of legislation?
When's the deadline? Is it May 13th?
Yeah, 40 days.
He's got a while yet. And he takes great care in this process. This is something that his attorneys go over very carefully. Right now with that campus carry bill, you've got an argument over a comma, an Oxford comma, which may determine whether Governor Deal signs that bill or not.
Well, you know, the bill as a whole makes no sense because it says you can have a gun here, but you can't have a gun there, but you can't have a gun here, but you can't. And they say, we asked him when they were in the well, we said, where are you going to put your gun in between those different buildings with it? Well, that's some of the problems in this compromise.
Okay, we maybe can get into that in the next part of the show, but we do have to break now and remind you that it is your support that makes this program possible. Here's how you can show that support. Thanks for joining us for Political Rewind. I'm Bradley George. A little bit shorter show today, but no shortage of things to talk about with Jim Galloway, State Senator Nan Orrick, and Leo Smith of the Georgia GOP. Jim, we've been focusing a lot. The political attention really has been on the 6th District race, but you know the gubernatorial election, the other state offices are going to start lighting up here. And the one candidate on the Republican side that everybody's waiting for is Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle. When we might be expecting an announcement from
I believe
him.
April 30th, if I'm not mistaken. He's got a very formal I might have missed the day. Maybe the 29th.
I think I've got it here.
Yeah, 29th.
It's Saturday the 29th.
A free event.
That's right. And it's going to be up near is it Duluth?
Yeah, it's at the Infinite Energy Center.
Right,
right, right. And it's
April 30th, actually.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So that's a Sunday. Yeah. So it's a big. He's going to start it off with a big bang, and you've got to consider that he's the presumed favorite. He's in the number two spot in the state capitol. He's got plenty of money. He's been building toward this for
a long time.
A number of years. He was going to be a candidate in 2010 until he had that back surgery. And so he's just been biding his time, but you've already got Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, who's thrown his hat in the ring. And when we were off air here, we were talking about Hunter Hill, a state senator, who's also considering the race. You've got on the Democratic side, you had something interesting happen last week. Where Mayor Tomlinson over at in Columbus,
Columbus, Teresa Tomlinson,
in Columbus, said she was looking at that race or maybe Secretary of State.
And what does Sally Yates decide to do? Our former,
you know, we have not heard from Sally Yates,
former U.S. Attorney from Atlanta,
right? I don't expect to. At some point, she's going to be testifying in front of Congress.
And I believe announced that's going to happen, and she will testify publicly. I think NBC News reported that today.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, she's made absolutely not a mumbling word about this.
So wait until after that testimony, and then we'll see. But I still don't see her as a candidate in 2018.
So Leo, who would you like to see?
I get to work for all the Republicans that choose to run. And it's a really interesting problem to have because, I mean, Georgia's got its own America's Got Talent. You know, Republicans have got talent, and their show has about 11 to 25 candidates always in this show. Democrats usually have about two or three in their show. It's much harder to manage a show with 15 candidates all on the Republican side. But I think it's good for politics to have all these people running for races, including on the Democrat side. I think it presents a bigger picture of who Americans are. And I think that's an important discussion to have. And so I look forward to it. And I'm sure that Republicans will end up with a candidate that will come through for if we end up in runoffs or whatever. I mean, I think we'll end up with a candidate that's a very strong candidate, just like we did with Senator Perdue's race and this race.
Do you have a favorite Democrat you want to see?
Stacey Abrams. I just like her. I mean, Stacey and I have been on panels together. She's one of the few Democrats who's willing to debate me.
She's the House Democratic leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she, I think she's committed to her story, and I like that about her. I mean, she represents, as a minority leader, she represents all of her Democrats and all of the legislators and that. And so I don't think she equivocates much. She's open to being oppositional for the sake of opposition. I just like people who are clear like that.
And we also have Stacey Evans, mm-hmm, of Smyrna.
I don't think that's going to materialize. She may run for a statewide seat, but it's not looking like it's going to be that one.
That's news to me.
Stacey Evans would make a great attorney general candidate.
There you go. Nan Orrick, who do you want to see from your party step up and run for governor?
I'm gonna back whoever puts their hat in the ring. I'm going to look at them carefully. Stacey's got a record of achievement and leadership. She's got a national profile.
You're going to have to tell us which
Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams. No, this Stacey Evans was a good and dear friend and has done a lot with her brief time in the legislature. Has really made a mark on battling for fairness for students and putting financial tools in the hands of low-income and first-generation college-bound students. Stacey's terrific and has proven herself to be a very able lawyer, too, and has been very, very generous philanthropically, creating scholarships with the money that she's won in the courtroom, legal yes. cases. So I can't say enough about either one of those women.
You know, it's interesting. The top three candidates right now for potential candidates for governor on the Democratic side are all female.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Republican side, we did leave out one name that's being knocked around. More of a centrist Republican. That's Joe Whitley, the former U.S. attorney.
Michael Williams, senator, relatively new senator, whose bragging rights are, he always reminds me that he's the first person in the assembly, the General Assembly, that came out for Trump with an endorsement. And so he's
in the race too.
He's in
right.
the he's in the race as well. And there's talk about Burt Jones. As another contender, certainly something that could materialize. So it could be a very robust season, and things are we're a purple state headed towards blue, and that's going to break through at a certain point.
Let me draw you out on that point a little bit, because what would a Democratic candidate for governor in 2018 have to do to move the needle in a significant way? Because everybody thought Jason Carter was going to do that in 2014, and he did a little bit better than Roy Barnes did in 2010, but not by much.
He performed with the Obama numbers.
Right.
Well,
he
right.
and Michelle.
And that's what we've got is we've got. I mean, that's why the sixth district is so important, because that needle did move with Ossoff. It moved from 43 to 48.
All right.
But not yet.
To be continued. Panel, Leo Smith, Nan Orrick, Jim Galloway, thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you for listening, and thanks for supporting GPB.